Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. I am very, I don't even have a word. I feel like I'm in the ozone with our wonderful guest that we just talked to this morning. I know nothing about yoga. I know very little about exercise at all. But this promises to be a wonderful, enlightening show. We should tell people that we are not broadcasting on WebEx. This is only on Blog Talk Radio. So go over there, 347-850-1407, and join Richard on the broadcast. What do you call that thing that you use, switchboard? Richard?
I would call it I call it the dashboard because that's what I think of it as, the control center. So I see people's calls come in, and also I see people in chat, so I can interact with people in chat.
Well, I'm just a voice on the phone today, so. I'd also like to thank everybody for their good wishes and get well cards and flowers. I am doing well. When I was in the hospital, Richard took over the radio show and did a wonderful, grand job of keeping everything rolling. So thank you, Richard. And for those of you who are wondering what was I in the hospital for, I fell off a two-story balcony and broke my back. And I'm thinking, as I read information about our guest, that yoga might be a great way to stretch me back into usefulness of my body. Okay. We are brought to you today by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health. And today the software that we're going to tell you about and give away is called Nano Voice, N-A-N-O Voice. We put it up on our website, soundhealthoptions.com. You can download it for free. And we originally created this program because of the movie The Secret, that she was talking about everybody can have what they want, they just have to visualize and see it. But the trouble was, not a lot of people really knew what they wanted. Like, if it was your neighbor's wife, you know, who gets to choose? The neighbor gets to keep the wife, or you get the new one? You get to have it her as a new wife, or, and what's her option? So people got really mixed up with what they really wanted. So we created this little nano voice, and you can talk to it. You push 5 little buttons, and it pops out a computerized report and gives you information about what's going on. Richard has talked before about loving that program because it really helps get to the depths of who you are and what you really want. Richard, do you have any announcements?
I do. I have one. Well, I have several, but I'll stick with just this one that just amazes me. I mean, I'm happy for them, and it amazes me that we still can't seem to find, I don't know. I can't think of a good metaphor that I can say on air. So I'll just say that Russia is banning GMOs. Russia and
Yay!
France have decided to hold hands and ban GMOs. Russia already had a hardline policy against GMOs. In 2012, Russia banned imports of Monsanto's corn after a French study linked the company's GMO products to tumors in lab rats. Last year, the country banned imports of GMO products, period, with Russian Prime Minister, with a name that I can't quite pronounce, Dmitry is what I'll have to call him, saying the nation already has the resources to produce its own non-GMO fare, And then this sort of slap I chuckle at. If Americans like to eat GMO products, let them eat them. We don't need to do that. We have enough space and opportunities to produce organic food, said Dmitry. The percentage of GMOs currently present in the Russian food industry is at a mere 0.01%. And yet, here we are, buy your GMO Kellogg's today. That's it. Blows my mind. Just blows my mind and just sets me into a snit.
I've noticed, Richard, that the cereal aisles are shrinking, and also they're putting up, contains no GMOs. Used to be a whole big long aisle in our grocery store, and now it's about a half an aisle. So I think parents are waking up and not feeding their kids poison before they go off to face the day.
I think they are, and there's still the back, you know, this battle against this dark matter, or whatever, I forget what the nickname for that bill was, where they're trying to make it so that we can't label products that they have GMOs. They actually, the angle is to label things non-GMO. And there's a big fight against that. And it's like, really? Russia and France can figure this out. I mean, Russia is not exactly our closest friend. But, I mean, the Russians have figured this out. Many other countries have figured this out. And yet, here we are, we're still just fighting over the ability to label it. Or not label it. I guess non-GMOs. No, that's labeling it. And, that's all I have to say. That's my answer. And do you have announcements, Sherry?
We could always save ourselves by exercising and doing yoga. Wonder if that has anything to do with getting the poisons out of our body. We should ask our guests.
Exactly, yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and introduce her?
I do. Moments in Time is strongly inspired by Nina Payne's real-life experiences. Having lost her brother, who also happened to be her best friend in 2012 of cancer, and then her father 4 months later to a broken heart, the book explores the obstacles many of us face and the courage it takes to overcome them. The author, Nina C. Payne, is a wife, a mother of two, and a yoga instructor. Her love of yoga goes beyond physical postures, and she finds great pleasure in studying the philosophy, psychology, and physiology of yoga. She's also a poet with a passion for reading music, hiking, rainforest cooking, and long walks on the beach. Nina is joining us to talk about her journey through loss and grief and the thread of yoga as a, I don't know what to call it, I can't call it a tool, as a lifestyle. Good morning, Nina. Actually, could you answer that there? What do we call yoga? Because it really
good
is
morning,
kind of
Richard.
A lifestyle. Good morning. It's a thing.
It definitely is a way of life. It's more than just the physical postures that we do. When I had first started my practice, it was the physical postures, and then it transformed, and I realized what it was doing for me on so many different levels. And I also realized, kind of to segue from what you were talking about, the GMOs, the healthier choices I was making in my life, I started to read more about health and nutrition, and all of that came as a result of my practicing of yoga. So it is definitely a lifestyle in terms of philosophy, how we live our life, and to talk about, I was interested in what you were saying about manifesting what we want in our life, and is it the neighbor's wife, is it this or is that, and I think if the manifestation is serving our highest and greatest good, it's more likely to happen and to manifest. If it's not, our soul is always pulling us in a different direction. Not to be too metaphysical, but yes.
Wow, right out of the gate. I love that.
Here we go.
Please. That, we're off and running. All right, yeah, we've pulled the gate open. So that's really interesting that you talk about that, because that is something I used to work out quite a bit in the gym. And I wasn't trying to be an Arnold Schwarzenegger. I just liked the way it felt. I liked the how it felt in my body. I liked that it got me out of my head. Because even though I'm calm on the outside, my head is quite active, always thinking too much. And when I went in the gym, it really got me into my body. And as a positive side effect of that, I had that same experience where my diet cleaned up automatically, not because I was going out of my way to do it, because I know back when I first started going to the gym, a lot of guys would eat whatever they want because there wasn't a lot of consciousness about food until you really became a serious bodybuilder. But what happened for me was my experience was when I would work out, if I had bad food days before, I would see it in how I felt when I was working out. I didn't have as much energy and you know, chi or whatever we want to call that. And that's exactly what you're saying is it was I would call that self-winding in a certain way where you have the aha of like, oh, in your case, I know enough about yoga to be not dangerous, but, you know, I could sound like I know something about yoga. I know enough mm-hmm. about yoga to know that I really should be doing it. That's what I know.
Yeah.
and that is interesting that you talk about that, that you had, you know, so up until the time you had started doing yoga, when did you actually start doing yoga? Had it always been in your life?
No, it hadn't. Actually, it's very interesting. It was when I met my husband. He would he had a very strong home practice, and I've always liked the outdoors and exercising, and he would just be like standing on his head or in warrior pose, and I would just go, okay, I'm going to go do some real exercise, and I'd go on a 5-mile run. And till I started practicing with him, and he would look like a Zen monk in these poses, and I would look like I'm sucking on a lemon. I mean, I was like, wow, this is intense. And then slowly I started to develop a deep respect for the practice and started to practice with him and learned over time, and it took a long period of time, that really ego has no place on the mat. You just meet yourself where you are, and you take it from there. And I tell people that if we can move a millimeter in any direction, and I can even take that a step further and say, if you can breathe, you can do yoga. It's about conscious awareness, conscious breathing, conscious movement in every aspect of our life. So when you say, is it a way of life? Yes, it's the way we step, it's the way we talk, it's the way we interact, it's the way we feel. So when you're creating, like even when you were saying, when you were in the gym, it created this movement, created body awareness for you, and it made you more aware of what you were inhaling, digesting, and that can be on many levels in terms of maybe music, the news, the media, all of these things. We become more conscious and aware of what we want to bring into our bodies and have tap into our cells and become part of our structure.
And now I want to jump back, and then I have a follow-up question to this. We're really here, we're indirectly talking about your debut novel, Moments in Time When One Heart Opens, Two Hearts Collide. Talk to us a bit about that, how you got it. It's a fictional work, and I'm putting quotes around that because I've read enough of it and have heard you speak enough that I know that it's, I don't know what that would be called, adjusted reality? I don't know. It's a fictionalized truth. I'm not sure what the words are, but there's a lot of your life experience in this book. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the experience that started you writing the book, and I want to weave the thread of yoga throughout this entire experience of how yoga helped you get through what you went through, and, you know, if you found that to be yoga to be an ally as you're going through the loss of your brother and your father.
Yes, I believe that yoga was one of those things that was really life-saving for me going through that loss. And it was interesting because, you know, I'd lost my brother in 2012, and like you said, lost my father 4 months later, and there was a period of time where I couldn't even get to my mat. I got down to 89 pounds. I couldn't eat. I was too full of grief and sorrow to even eat. And there was really nothing anyone could say to me. I had 2 children and a loving husband. There was nothing really anyone could say to me that was going to snap me out of that. That was something I had to do. That was a realization that I had to come to. And I was in the darkness, and there was only me who could find that light switch. And it was when we were in Boston where that light switch finally did go on for me. And it was my first time in the city, and for some reason I was inspired by the brownstones, the people, the feel of the city. But there was this line in a poem that I had written many years earlier that said, "My dear friend, in the simplicity of life, all the opposites are equal." And that stuck with me almost like a mantra. And I'm like, why is this last line just hanging with me? And I realized if the depths of despair and grief and loss can be this painful, then around that corner, there is something waiting for me. There is a blossoming, an awakening, a joy and a love like that has equal or greater value than that pain I was feeling. And ironically, there was a yoga street around the corner, a yoga studio around the corner from where we were staying, and I just got myself back to the mat. And that's when life started to transform again, and food started to taste good again, and I became alive. And then when I came back, it was within a couple of weeks, I sat down and I started writing Moments in Time, and it was like the floodgates had opened, and I couldn't stop writing even if I wanted to. I went from a mom who would three meals a day at every child's event, I mean, just to a mother who my children would come downstairs and want to know what's for dinner, and my hand would go up because I would be so deep in thought with this book. So it was a cathartic healing experience for me that, just like yoga, it was like movement. So it got that stuck energy moving again, and I started to flow again, and I started to feel again. So that was a long way in answering your question. And so, yes, yoga, writing, and the things that made me feel good saved my life.
And as you wrote, as you were in the process of writing, because as I recall, I've either read or heard you talk about you sat down to write a letter, or, you know, that you didn't, I don't know that you went in with the intention of writing a book, but then it evolved that you were writing a book. Is that
true?
Exactly. Am I getting that right?
I didn't.
Okay.
You're getting it absolutely right. I've never considered myself really a novelist. I've written little essays, well, short essays, maybe can be considered even a short story, but for me to have ever thought I was going to write and publish a book, I just basically wrote this essay about two people on a beach, and it was a forbidden romance, and it was about this electricity and this overwhelming, overpowering attraction that they had towards one another. And from there, the book kind of took off. And I thought initially at some point in my life I would write a story about my brother and I and our journey together. And I thought, well, you know, if I ever do that, I'm going to title it A Sister's Journey, A Brother's Love. But my brother's story is intertwined in there just as yoga is. And when you were talking about, you know, it being partially true, well, I think Stephen King puts it best, is that fiction is the truth between the lies. There's many truths in the story. And the one thing that I think and I hope comes across is that no matter that it is a novel and that it is fiction, the emotions are real and the core of it is true.
Yes, I have notes in here because I wasn't quite sure how to address as I read parts of the book. I thought, and I've heard you interviewed and read, you know, a number of write-ups, and how close it is. I mean, it is so, that is such a perfect line about the fiction is the truth between the lies, because it so seems to weave through your story. I mean, it's an amazing thing that you had your body woke up and thought, or had the aha that, you know, this was a way to process some of the grief out and tell a great story. You know, it's a fun novel, air quotes fun, you know, of grief and loss and romance. We don't usually think of those words altogether, but I mean, it's really, it's an amazing combination and an amazing process that you get to have all these, you seem to have a lot of ahas during this whole process and express some of that wisdom in the book. Am I reading too much between the lines? But it certainly seems like it.
No, I really did go through many, many realizations, and I think that's why writing the book was so healing for me, because, you know, you always wonder to yourself, when we're clinging to the past, we're not living in the present. When we cling to thoughts of should I, could I, you know, and live with the shoulds and the coulds of what I could have done this differently, should I have done this differently? When we live with that, it keeps us so stuck. And I think that's where despair and isolation and this feeling of not being connected comes from. So when we let go of that and we let go of any expectations of anything to come, we learn to live our life in the present moment. And anyone who's had anyone close to them die or pass away, there's this realization that things can change just in a moment. So really experience your life to its absolute fullest and move away from fear and just move into trust. and let go of expectations. I think expectations is one, I think Shakespeare said that, is one of the greatest things that leads to disappointment. Just learn to live your life in the moment without expectation. That doesn't mean you don't have ambition. That doesn't mean that you don't, that you're lazy. It just means that you become more present with your life and with the people around you, and I think that's the greatest gift we can give to one another.
Well, I think there's such a fine line in between ambition and expectation, because ambition to me is the desire of something, but an expectation has an attachment to the outcome, whereas an ambition is just, I really would like to blank or have some achievement or a goal or something, but it's the goal of, it's the energy of wanting to, whereas the expectation is like, I have, you know, there's just a difference between those two that is so strong, because that attachment to outcome, now we're going to get into like a whole philosophy thing, but I think attachment to outcome is what, you know, messes us up. That's my personal opinion. And it's a tricky area, you know, when you start having all these attachments. You know,
that is so
stop,
beautifully said. You phrased that so beautifully. The deficit, you know, the distinction between the two. I couldn't have even said that any better. I mean, I love that. I'm going to quote you on that because that is such a beautiful definition of ambition and of expectation. That's exactly it. It just hits it. It nails it right there.
Thank you. now let's lean back into yoga. I'll use that meaningly. Let's lean back into yoga. Come on, let's lean into it. I know we can get me on the mat. I know I can get past the like old guy on mat falling on his head. Let's talk about yoga. Gently try and mollycoddle us, Sherry and I, into the like, okay, get on the mat. Don't worry, we're not going to hurt you, or maybe just a little. You know, I know it really does carry in your life, and I know that I have had that kind of, you know, passion and ambition. You know, when I, as I say, working out, or when I was cycling a lot, or something, I've had those times when you're in the moment doing it, that it's great. It's just that in the case of yoga, it always looks so, at least in movies in my mind, when I think of, you know, you see the classic scene in a movie where you have a bunch of, you know, 20 to 30-year-olds in mats and perfect bodies doing poses that are just, like, amazing. And then you have the old guy in the corner who's, like, falling over and, you know, can't, and I feel kind of like that in my mind. So talk to us.
Right.
Give us, enroll us in the yoga, because I know it really has the potential for amazing centering and at ease, and, you know, that it really, and again for me, I believe it would help get me out of the headspace issue.
Yeah. You know, one of the misconceptions of yoga is that you have to be flexible or strong, or when people go to a studio and, like you said, they see all these, you know, bodies that are so flexible and moving in ways that one can only imagine. And the reality is yoga is not about bagging a pose. Yoga is about finding sensation and learning to hang out with it comfortably. And if like when we're doing a forward bend, for example, which is a very healing, soothing posture, any forward bend that we do, the blood is circulating down to the brain, we're giving our heart a rest, and then when we slowly come out of that posture with our breath and always engaging our breath in the postures, we come out feeling really rejuvenated and relaxed. It's when we get onto our mat and feel that a pose needs to look a certain way. And that's one of the tricky things about it is when you are, I have a home practice. I don't go to a studio, and that's taken me years to develop, but, you know, a more disciplined home practice because there's so many distractions. But it's only me and my mat. There's no one to impress. There's no one I'm trying to compete with. It's just me. And the alignment points in yoga are so important. So I encourage beginners to really find a qualified teacher to learn from. And Iyengar, I think, is one of it's a style of yoga by BKS Iyengar. And that's one of the greatest starting points, I think, for anyone, no matter the stage of their practice, but especially beginners, because it emphasizes the alignment points. And yoga is not about how far you go. It's not the depth of the posture. It's just feeling something in the posture. And yes, initially there's going to be discomfort because we're working in ways that maybe we're not accustomed to. But slowly over time, you know, there's so many benefits in terms of our flexibility and, yes, the strength, but there's also what's happening internally to our internal organs. Anytime we do a posture, we're compressing one side and stretching another. So that compression is restricting blood flow to a certain internal organ, whether it be our liver or kidney, whichever posture you're doing. Now imagine this. When you release that posture, fresh blood, oxygenated blood is rushing to that area of the body. And so it's wonderful for the joints, wonderful for our internal organs. So if you think about it in those terms, what is this doing for me internally, and get away from the external factor, which is a beautiful side effect that happens over time, then I think one can enjoy the experience and the process more.
I love everything you said. As of yet, I'm still not on the mat. Because how do you get past, you know, back to attachment. Okay, I have attachment. Mm-hmm. I have ambition. I like the idea of being on the mat. But yet I still have attachment to, like, falling over and hurting myself. Is that why? What I really need to ask you is you talk about having a home practice versus a studio. Mm-hmm. And that's to a non-practitioner. I know what that means. But is that what I really need to do? I will totally personalize this. Is that what I really need to do is go out and find a studio somewhere where somebody's going to, like, guide me through at least learning the basics? Are there basics, or
Yes.
Go ahead.
There are definitely basics. I mean, the foundational, see, that's the thing. You don't want to ever do a pose where you feel, if you're doing a pose where you feel you're going to topple over, you've no business doing that pose. A strong foundation is where it starts. That's the key. There are many injuries in yoga because people are going beyond where they are. And that's again, where injuries happen. The foundation is what's important. And building that strong foundation, building a strong core, building a strong shoulder girdle to support you in these more, postures that look so, you know, unattainable. If you have a strong foundation, by the time you get to that stage of, let's say, doing a headstand or a handstand, and that shouldn't even be a goal. I mean, if that happens, great. You can receive all the benefits and by doing modifications of these postures. So really, there is no ultimate goal. Every pose in yoga is infinite. It's about just finding out where are you, connecting with your breath. Why do we say in yoga, stay with your breath? Because the breath is always happening in the present moment. So there's very little risk of injury if you're staying with your breath, connecting with your breath, and being mindful of not going to where there is ever pain. You don't want to go to where there's pain. Pain is always a signal to our bodies that something is wrong. So back off when you get to that point. Don't let that chatter in your mind, that story in your mind, that ego in your mind tell you need to be further. You don't need to be anywhere. And every day our bodies are different. That's one of the biggest things I had to learn to accept, because some days I'm more balanced, some days I'm not. And I need to accept that and be where I'm at that day, that moment, that breath in time.
Go ahead, Sherry.
I can see from what you're talking about how yoga deals with the physical, the structure. Does it also deal with metabolism, like we were talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Can it detox?
Absolutely. So when we're doing a great example of how we can, the spine is so healthy. The ancient rishis and yogis say if you have a healthy spine, you have a healthy mind and body. And there's many postures in yoga that ask the spine to hold itself. You know, you're really, if you go to the gym, there's really no machines there that are going to strengthen your spine. But when the spine is asked to hold itself and to hold itself up, it's really strengthening the spine. Another thing that we do in yoga a lot of is we're also twisting. So when we do twists, if you can visualize like a sponge being twisted out or a dirty rag being twisted out, we're detoxifying, we're cleansing out the poisons that tend to accumulate in there. And so by keeping the spine healthy and strong, we're keeping our minds and our bodies healthy and strong, because it's like the pathway to all these neurons and nerve endings. Once my brother's cancer had reached into the spinal fluid, I knew it was over. I just knew at that point, it's a matter of time. before he passes. We were fortunate. His initial prognosis was 4 to 6 months, and then he lived 4 years. But I knew that once it had reached the spine, it was just a matter of time. So yoga, yes, is very detoxifying in many ways and very cleansing in the postures that we do. That was kind of what I was talking about earlier. Focus more on what's happening internally and less on what's happening externally. That will just happen over time.
And has anybody ever observed, there's a process called cranial, or a type of tech, or body work, I guess I would call it, cranial sacral work, where the adjustments are very subtle and it helps adjust the cranial sacral fluid or the flow of the spinal fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody observed that yoga has an effect on that? Because that has such an effect. I've had some training in craniosacral, and it has such an amazing effect on a person when they first come to you and you don't really do much in terms of there is no manipulation. It's a very soft, subtle holding of particular places. And the person gets up and goes, wow, I really like that. And has anybody observed that as a benefit from doing yoga? I would imagine it would have to, because there's so much spine movement in theoretically a gentle way that it would have effect on all of that as well. Has anybody observed that you know of?
Oh, there have been many studies of the effects of yoga on, talking earlier about the endocrine system, metabolism, the central nervous system. It is so beneficial in so many ways, and I think that, again, the forward bends that we do in yoga, they create this effect of just a peace and a tranquility, especially as we come, and we also say in yoga the healing and the true benefits happen in between the postures. That's where the healing occurs. Like I said, when we're in the posture, we're compressing, and then when we release, that's when all of the blood is flowing to that area. When we come out of a forward bend, that's where you feel the calming, soothing effects. And it's so important to move mindfully and slowly. And that's why sometimes in classes where they're doing a more flow and they're moving quicker, I don't recommend that for beginners. I recommend for beginners starting out with truly a gentle-based practice, which is moving slowly. I practice slowly. And in my own practice, I move slower in my postures. I adjust slower. And that works for me. I prefer that style where I move slowly, hold the poses longer, and come out just as mindfully as I went in.
We were talking before the show about a woman who I listened to on another network, and she started out her career by doing yoga classes online, but I mean radio show yoga classes. And I was listening to her talk recently about something else, but she mentioned that in yoga, the highest injury rate is related directly to not the poses, but the in-betweens, the shifting poses. Is that point about? Is the point? If you're going to have an injury, it's when you're moving from A to B. It's not really in either A or B. It's that transition. So it's interesting that you're saying, do it really, pay attention to that transition is really important. That's really interesting.
The transitions in yoga are monumental, and they can't be emphasized enough. And unfortunately, sometimes in yoga classes, they're not emphasized enough. There's a couple of different reasons for that. A lot of people, because they're so excited to get out of the posture, they whip out rather than moving out slowly and very mindfully and with breath. And the other thing is that when you're moving out of a posture, you're working different muscles on the way out. So you're also creating this different muscle memory, and you're engaging different muscles. So it gives you more strength. So it is so important in the transitions to move just as mindfully and just move the opposite way that you went in, you move out. So it's very, very important when I'm working with students, especially people who are starting out, if I see them whipping out of a posture, I'll actually make them do it again and repeat it so that they come out, the correct way, so they don't injure themselves.
Well, I mean, it's such an art of, I could almost sound like I do yoga. It's such an art of being in the moment. Because it really, you're so in your body doing it that those transitional times, I could see why that could be tricky, because when you're in a posture, from people that I have talked to that have do a lot of yoga or have done yoga, is there's that peaceful space you enter into when you're in a pose. Is that true? Is that a correct observation?
Yes, when done correctly, it certainly is. And also, again, it's about really tapping into, again, discomfort is normal and it's the natural process. But when you start to feel like you're losing your breath, if you start to pant, if you start to have to breathe heavily, then it no longer is a yoga pose. When you can stay with a good, smooth, flowing breath, inhalations through the nose, exhalations through the nose as well, when you can maintain that balance with your breath, and it's not, you're not overexerting, but that doesn't mean you're not challenging yourself. It just means that your breath is able to flow freely and you're not straining anywhere. That's when you know that you're in the posture correctly. If you come out of a posture and you're suddenly breathing very heavily, you may have been holding your breath in the posture, which is not a good thing, or you may have been working too hard in the posture, which is also not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It takes away from the benefits rather than gives you the benefits.
Well, that actually kind of, you know, it fits in the same in life. There are times, oftentimes, when I'm with somebody or I'm on air with somebody who's getting nervous before we start the show, and I'll say, you know, remember that there's a difference between, you know, sucking wind and breathing are not the same thing. And that it's really, you know.
I like that.
Thank you. That if you want, if you can go through life and breathe smoothly, that's a really good indicator. I don't know why breath is so underobserved. It just seems like a, you know, because I have that from both cycling and also from weightlifting, where you go into a gym with guys who are lifting a lot of weight and they're holding their breath while they're doing it. Not, I mean, there is a moment where if you're pushing way too much steel, you do kind of, you know, hold your breath and push, but you have to really breathe. If you don't breathe, you're in trouble. And that's the same in life. If you don't breathe, you're in trouble.
You know, it's virtually impossible to be anxious, stressed, and I challenge anyone to this. It's impossible to be stressed, angry, frustrated when you're taking long inhalations through the nose and long exhalations through the mouth or through the nose. It doesn't even matter. If you do this, let's say you're in a tense situation, you're in traffic or you're with your kids or somebody's getting on your nerves, try it. And it's not like just one inhalation and one exhalation, but just these long, again, mindful inhalations in and out, and try to be angry. And also turn the corners of your mouth up a little bit and try to be angry and stressed in those situations. It doesn't work. It's impossible.
Breathing, the ultimate workout. Breathing.
Right. It is.
It's amazing. Okay, so I want to dance us back into moments of time. As you were going through at some point, it seems like you lost your yoga because you were in such a state of shock and awe and trauma and grief. Did you actually wander off away from yoga, or you were so distracted in the process of what was happening that you didn't, it's not like you walked away from it, you just lost sight of doing it? Is that what happened for you?
You know, I think what happened for me, when my brother was going through his decline, I continued to practice, and it was very effective for me. When I lost him and then I lost my father, I just didn't want anything that made me feel good. It was really an odd period of time I went through. It almost felt, and it sounds cliche, but I felt guilty for feeling joy. So I moved away from those things, and I just basically became reclusive. I didn't want to connect with people or anyone. I was exhausted physically and mentally and emotionally, and I was shutting down is what was happening to me. And thankfully, and again, it's not anything anyone can tell you. We all have to find our way. There's a lot of things people say that they think they're helping when in essence, you know, you're just deaf to it. You can't hear it. We just have to find our way and realize that, you know, life happens to people. We can't choose what happens to us, but we can certainly choose how we react to it. That's always in our power. And I think realizing that empowered me. And I was like, I can choose how to react to this situation. And I was really becoming a hypocrite because I would really put on a good show for everyone around me. Everyone really thought I had it together, and only those really close to me could tell I was falling apart. But I would always tell my children, the way we honor those who pass before us is by living our best life. So I was being a hypocrite during that period of time because I wasn't living my best life. And once I started having compassion for the pain, compassion for the grief, compassion for myself, and embracing the pain and embracing the grief, and I stopped trying to resist it, that was when I was able to work my way through it. And I hope that makes sense.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Because I can see the... I had a... my mother died. When my mother died, I was the one in charge because my mother went into an ICU and didn't come out. And I was in charge because my father, they'd been married for more than 40 years, and my father was in such a state of shock and trauma that he just couldn't cope. And so I was in charge, and I saw her multiple times a day, and I interacted with the nurses and the ER, you know, the ICU doctors. And then when she died, I was in charge, not completely in charge, but, you know, of the organization and the handling and the wake and everything. And I remember a period after she died of the first shock was that I'd been so embroiled in, that had been my focus for the last month of her life. I mean, that's really all I did. And then when she died, and then that was all over and post-wake, I remember sitting in the house and being in a state of feeling guilty because I had a sense of relief because of the experience had been so consuming that I had lost all, you know, anything like even the idea of meditation or a walk in the woods or going and looking at the ocean or, you know, at that same state, that same weird state of sadness for the loss, diving deep into grieving for that loss, and then feeling bad because I had any sense of like, oh my God, I'm, you know, in a certain way, later on I could actually express I was actually happy for her that she got to go because she was miserable and wanted to go and was in a lot of pain. But even that, it took me a long time. I relate to that state of trauma and shock where you can't, you know, feel happy because someone that you care about deeply has died. So it's a gray zone that people don't talk about a lot.
Yeah, and that I think just that gave the chills. Yeah.
And the idea of having something to fall back on or get back into, like using the yoga, back to the thread of yoga in your, you know, writing of moments of time and your experience, using the yoga to fall back to like, you know, have that body memory come back seems like a hugely powerful, you know, ally.
It was very powerful. It was, you know, I honestly, it's funny because I really believe that my true practice started then, even though I had been practicing for years. I started practicing in a much different way. And I don't take a single moment on my mat for granted, and I try not to take moments in life for granted. And what you said is so true. I was I held medical directive over my brother, and in the story, Moments in Time, Cassandra's brother, Andy, it's depicted that he made the decision to stop medical treatment. And in my story, I'm the one that actually had to make that decision because my brother was no longer capable of making those decisions. And it was a divisive thing in our family. But I still believe I made that best decision. And I also knew what his wishes were because we were so close and we had talked about so many things. But like you said, there is, and when he passed, there was this tremendous sense of relief. I mean, it was... He lingered in misery for a long time, but there was also what I felt, this selfish sense of relief, not just for him, but for myself. And there were moments when I just was like, okay, you can go. And it was, and there wasn't a guilt attached to that, but once I let go of that guilt and I let go of any wondering, should I, could I, and it really accepting and surrendering that with the information I had, I made the best decisions I could, and I came to peace with that. And that was also liberating for me. I can very much relate to your story with your mother.
Yeah, it's that, as you said, that making peace with it. That's really what it is you, I was in the same position with my mother of being the DPO, durable power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And she had given me that. It wasn't like, you know, she was like, no, at some point she actually told the doctors, he's in charge. And it wasn't, you know, it was just like she was exhausted. She was in pain. She was, you know, really, now that I look back years later, you know, she was ready to go. And I wanted to honor that. I wanted to honor that with her and for her because of our, not just because of our closeness, but because she put me in charge because she knew that I was able to make that decision and honor her. And when that happened, as you said, there's no prep for this. You know, nobody gives you a life lesson here that's like, until you've had this experience, it's hard to get the, you know, all of that and that cascade of emotions that occur. But as you said, that's a great way to phrase it, is making peace with it. Because it really is, it's, as you well know, it's an impossible decision. And yet afterwards, once you come out of the dark side of the loss, that you really have that aha of like, no, that really was the right thing to do. Because you have people around you who are judging and wanting to rescue and wanting to like, no, let's do every last thing possible. Because I had that argument with family friends. And how at some point, no, they put you in charge because they know that you can make that tough decision and that's they want you to help them. And it's a real thing when you get into that battle of dealing with people who are like, no, let's do this, let's try that, it's, all right, we've had enough suffering. So it's making peace with it is a perfect phrase.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And like you said, that takes time because you go through that battle within yourself and that conflict within, and those are good things to go through. I read this one thing that really rang true to me about, you know, sometimes you think something is a nervous breakdown when actually it's a breakthrough, it's an emotional breakthrough. When you think everything is like falling on you and you just can't breathe, it could be you're maybe on the precipice of something amazing and great. So never give up. You know, that's one of the biggest messages I think of Moments in Time and just of my life and experience of what I've gone through is don't give up, because it could be. And that's one of the things I apply in my practice of yoga. If you know, if I'm struggling and I could be just there on a breakthrough, and if I quit and I give up, what then? So, yeah, I mean, imagine if all these great philosophers and thinkers and inventors of our time gave up just at that moment when they were about to invent something amazing and fantastic. Just we can never give up.
Michelangelo walks away from the Sistine Chapel because it's like, I just can't do this anymore. That's it, I'm out.
Right. This is too high.
Drops his palette and walks away. That's it, I'm out.
I'm out of here.
I've had enough of this. I can't do this anymore. It hurts lying on that pallet up there in the cold. That's it. Really?
It's true.
I don't think so. It just doesn't happen.
That's right.
Okay, no. I have a to lighten the conversation slightly.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question from the audience. Let's talk about yoga.
Okay.
The difference between yoga and Pilates.
Mm-hmm.
The difference.
I think the difference between yoga and, I haven't done much Pilates. I understand it's wonderful for the core and for stretching out the muscles. I think the difference between yoga and most forms of exercise, I don't want to speak for all, is that yoga is almost like going to a gas station and filling up your tank. I used to be a runner, and I know that I had run a marathon. There were days I'd be spent for the rest of the day after a long run. And what I find with yoga is it energizes me. It fills up my tank. It fills up my emotional, my physical, and my mental tank. And so every time I get onto that mat, I'm being replenished and I'm being rejuvenated, and I'm just, I feel energized by the time I walk off my mat. And also, yoga truly creates a body awareness like no other form. I believe in any form of movement. I mean, if somebody is not into yoga, just get out there, move and breathe. And I do still, I will run now, but I run differently. I run with awareness and I run with my breath, and I never go further than that. And so that's, I think, the difference. And again, movement is life. To me, as long as people are moving and they're you know, moving their bodies and living, that's the most important thing, no matter which form you you choose to do. And creative outlets, I can't emphasize that enough. Finding outlets to express your energy and keep that energy moving, because when we don't, it just gets stuck. Some people feel it in their neck. Some people feel it in their chest. I mean, a lot of people, you know, will feel it in their low back. You know, I have students who've told me my back just suddenly went out on me. And I'm like, your back didn't just suddenly go out on you. Your back's been going out on you. And then that one twist, it went out. So it's important that we take care of ourselves every day and do things to, you know, nurture ourselves every single day.
And breathe.
And breathe. Back to that breath thing, right?
It's that breath thing. It's an amazing thing. And it makes
sense. It's an amazing thing.
It really is. Breath is just so underrated. As I think about yoga, it makes a lot of sense in terms of, Sherry asked earlier about detoxifying and the effects. Out of the spine are all these innervation points, and what that means is that the spine passes out through muscles, and those nerves go to, let's say, energize or innervate the liver. And that comes out through a point in the spine, passes through the spinal muscles, and then through the body. And so if you're stretching and bending and, you know, stretching all those muscles out like Band-Aids in a gentle way, you're going to aid the process of getting those organs energized by, you know, not causing the blockages, possibly loosening up ossifications or, you know, mineral deposits in the muscles and the bones. In the muscles more so, that cause blockages of those nerves that innervate to the organs. So it makes a lot of, I'll call it technical sense in my mind. As I say, I have no idea why this just popped in, but it just did. That it would have benefits systemically through, you know, really through the whole body. Even if we're just, you know, doing a simple, as I say, I've seen enough yoga to act as if I know something, but I've never done it. I've done some stretching like you would at a gym, but not actually doing yoga. And back in those days when I was going to the gym, yoga was sort of like, oh, come on, really?
Right.
But then you watch somebody do a full headstand, and you think, or at least in my mind, I think, really, a full headstand? I actually have, in full disclosure, there's a magazine distributed on the West Coast called Common Ground. I didn't know this. September is National Yoga Month. But there's a picture of a woman, a pregnant woman, doing a headstand.
Mm-hmm.
And this blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, pregnant is a whole thing unto itself. But here this woman is doing a full headstand, and she's smiling. Now, she might be smiling because she's like, what am I thinking? But she's actually, like, you know, smiling while she's doing this. And I'm just thinking, this is amazing. You know, what a sense of, you know, talk about centering. When you're being pregnant, you really want to be centered, for goodness sakes.
Right, and that would be for the more advanced practitioner and someone who's practiced for a long time. But, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's just, it's just a wonderful confidence booster as well, because maybe the posture you've been working on and trying to, you know, get to, and then suddenly you can do it, and you're like, it's not even suddenly. I mean, it's just months and months and months of practice. And Patabi Joyce, who's another great yogi, says practice and all is coming. And that's something I always remind myself, is that, you know, true practitioners, no matter what it is of your craft, it's about practicing correctly, whether it be, you know, a musical instrument or yoga or whatever it is that you're practicing. Making sure that you're doing it correctly is what gets results. And that's why I emphasize a strong foundation, and not to get ahead of yourself, to just truly build the strong foundations that you need to carry you, you know, through life. I mean, because yoga is something you can do forever. That's another beautiful thing about it. It doesn't have a lifespan, only your own lifespan. It just, you know, there's many, like dancers have a lifespan. They suffer a lot of injuries, gymnasts as well. So yoga is something that we can do forever. And,
Like breathing. It depends
like breathing.
About the breathing. It's like we can breathe forever, really. Let's all pause and take a breath. I'll just keep talking, though. I can't help myself. it really is, I know, as I said, I think at the beginning of the show or backstage when we were talking just before the show, I know enough about yoga to know that I really want to be doing it, and it just hasn't happened yet. I know it will. The door will open, and I'll walk in because I've had injuries. I've had stuff that's occurred. And I know that yoga would be good for helping stretch me out. I've never been great at stretching. I've been very good at making my muscles tight and formed and gnarly and tough. But the, you know, the idea of, oh man, laying down and breathing and being bendy and stretchy, as I would call yoga, is a great, you know, I have a desire for that. That would be a great thing.
Okay, so I see us
moving shockingly toward the end of our hour, and I want to ask you a question about moments of time. When you started, when you started writing Moments of Time, did you have an intention of putting so much wisdom into it, or was that just sort of a side benefit of the process that you'd gone through? Or did it just end up, there was a lot of really wonderful life information in the context of that story?
You know, I think it, well, there was no conscious effort to add wisdom to it. It was just my experiences of what I'd gone through and just drawing upon that. And it was kind of like what we had said earlier. I guess in some ways it can be looked at as a veiled memoir. It was just a lot of my experiences and what I had learned through those experiences. And in many ways, it's also a cautionary tale because she does get involved with the situations where she starts feeling this strong attraction towards her yoga instructor, and she's been married for many, many years and has two children. So it's a multi-layered, multifaceted story, and it's about friendship, and it's about, trying to, realizing that we're human and we're fallible. And not being so judgmental. I think one of the things I've learned through this whole process is to judge less and to have more compassion and not to judge someone's story, to just look at it and say, it's their story. I haven't walked it. I haven't walked their path. So I'm just going to nod gracefully and wish them well. So, yeah, that's kind of where that came from and some of the things. I've learned so many life lessons just by the writing of the book that I didn't even know I was aware of. But writing it brought it to the forefront of my consciousness and made me more aware.
I think that is. I think that really wants to be a bumper sticker about just, you know, nod and what did you just say? What was that great line about nod and, you know, let them lead their life?
God, what did I just say? Because I like that. Nod and
wish
them
well.
That was great. Got to incorporate that in
somebody
the sequel.
Should write that down. That's a great one. That would be a great book title. That's really good. That's so true. I mean, that's so true. We could do a whole show on philosophy.
We could.
I have a question. I have a question from the audience. If there is no, if you don't have a local yoga instructor, is there a book or a how-to something where you can start or get a foundation in doing yoga? Okay.
There is. And what I would recommend is what we started out with, Iyengar, and that's spelled I-Y-E-N-G-A-R. It's B-K-S Iyengar. Just go to Amazon, Google him, and videos will come up and books will come up. He is just, he's amazing. His philosophy of life and of yoga and his alignment points and the foundations and building that strong foundation is a wonderful place for people to start. So that's where I would recommend people start if they want to take up the practice of yoga in a home practice.
Okay, wonderful. And how do people follow and find you and find more information about, and where would you like them to get your book?
Well, they can go to my website, Nina C. Payne, and my last name is spelled P-A-Y-N-E, and that's my website, ninacpayne.com. And from there, there's many links for Barnes & Noble, Atlas Books, Amazon, of course, that's the primary one, that they can click on and purchase my book, Moments in Time, there. And also, there's my Facebook page where I have a lot of my writings, my poetry, my essays, and my Facebook page, I only started it in my author's page, which is Nina C. Payne Author, and there's also a link to that on my website. I only started that in November, and I already have close to 22,000 followers on my page, and I think, like Moments in Time, the writings that I write about come from just this raw, authentic place inside of me, so it's just my voice, and that's why I feel people are connecting to it, and that's why I feel they connect with the book, because there's something for everyone, and people will be able to relate to it.
So, that's really great. And I noticed that. Are you bilingual? Because I noticed
I think I am.
But I saw somebody. I saw on your Facebook page. I thought it was you responding to somebody. Somebody was speaking Spanish on your Facebook page. Am I messing things up in my brain?
Oh, no, you're not. I have a very,
okay.
I have a long, large following in the United States and Canada, but I also have a strong Latin following, which is beautiful. People in Peru, Colombia, Mexico, even
wow.
Chile and Argentina. And that started, interestingly enough, you know how you invite friends first to like your page. I know people in Costa Rica, and I know people in Colombia, and have relatives in Colombia and Peru. So it started the snowball effect. And I think because a lot of my writing is, Latins are very passionate and fiery, and so I have a large following there too. And just as a matter of fact, my book has just been translated into Spanish, and now it's in the editing process. So it will be coming out in a Spanish edition as well.
I went to your Facebook page and I'm reading along, and suddenly I'm seeing Spanish, and I know enough Spanish to like go, what? We're speaking Spanish here. And it was like, I was very confused for a moment. I got slightly lost. And here's our closing question. So since you wrote your book with what I would call a hook at the end,
mm-hmm.
When do you think people get to look forward to the sequel?
I hope to have the sequel done by, I hope it comes out, because, I have to go through the editing process, which is when the real rewriting and writing begins. I hope to have it out by the middle of 2016, and I think people will be surprised by the sequel, and there's a lot more life lessons that Cassandra and I have learned along the way, so I hope people will continue that journey along with me. Yeah.
You're like one of the super characters out of, Fantasy IV or something, where, Cassandra is your alt, this. I like the fact that you speak about her as her almost,
Almost.
Cassandra is the almost. No, I'm not Cassandra, no, but we're really quite related. We're twins. Twins born and, separated at birth, something like that.
What's really funny, and I know we're pressed for time, but, when I was writing Moments in Time, I looked over at my husband and I said, you would not believe what Mark just said, and I'd be cracking up. And he's like, honey, you just read that. And I was like, oh, right. It's like we become these characters in a way. He has
you
to give
hear
me a reality
voices,
check.
Right, you hear their voices. It's good your husband's there going, no, that's you. Because you
right.
could soon be, having voices in your head. Yeah. Well, definitely, contact us when you have your next, when the sequel is out, because it would be great to talk to you more when that happens. That's very exciting. And also the fact that things are being translated and distributed into the Spanish world is stupendous. I'm very excited for you about that. That's very cool.
Thank you.
They're a lover. That culture is such a lover of the romance story.
Right.
They are. I think that's an awesome world to be diving into.
Yeah.
Well, this has been very fun. I hope we didn't dance too far outside the edges, but, everybody breathe. It was, this was a fabulous show, and so great having you, Nina.
Thank you, Richard,
and
thank you so
really
much for putting me at ease. Yeah, you just interview, you're a great interviewer, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And any closing thoughts, Sherry? Are you over there on the mat doing exercises while we're speaking?
She is such a gentle person from a soul on out to her persona to the community. I think her book just really amplifies who she is. And you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, Sherry, and I would love to come back. Thank you so much. I appreciate those words. That was very kind.
For those of you who weren't with us all through this, we do have a software program for you on our website, soundhealthoptions.com. Under downloads, it's called Nano Voice, and it will help reveal your secret stuff.
Nano Voice is an amazing piece of software. I know I say this every time Sherry talks about it, but it's so true that it's really amazing for, you know, and especially the fact that it's free, that it'll give you a readout of, you know, who your personality is and things. And then once you learn how to use it more, Sherry has some great classes at the Sound Health Options site talking, you know, really showing you how to use the Nano Voice to look at other people's characteristics, or, you know, even do allergy testing. It's an amazing piece of software. It's really wonderful.
I have to look that up. I've never heard of that. I'm putting that in my notebook right now to look that up. And I can find that on your website?
Yes.
Yes, under download.
Under download. Okay. Wonderful.
All right, everybody. Well, this has been a great show. I know we went all over, but that was really, I mean, in terms of, you know, all over the place, but that was a great dance. Thank you so much, Nina.
Thank you, Richard. You both have a great
everybody,
day.
Thanks, you too. Everybody have a great rest of the weekend, and we'll see you, I believe, on Tuesday. I'm not sure what we're talking about, but I know we're talking about something. Always guaranteed that. All right, everybody. Bye-bye. And
you'll give me your email address when?
Well, I can just tell you now. She didn't hang up on us. I was concerned she was going to hang up on us. There we go. Now you're back. Or at least I have you back. My email is talktomeguy@gmail.com. Oop, and you're gone. She did hang up on us.